Hello, everybody. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini.
You want
to do the cold opening?
Oh, no.
Okay. This episode is brought to you by Harry's.com. Harry's.com, go to Harry's.com, buy a shaver, buy a razor. You can actually buy replacement blades, too, and they're amazing. They're cheap. They're great. You love them.
I just reordered.
Yeah, and you can get $5 off with ComedyFilmNerds.com.
I just got $5 off.
Grant's got a nice jawline and a nice beard. He could definitely do a Harry's ad.
Yeah.
If it was just like tip of the nose down, showing.
I'm a good jaw model.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you are. You got a nice Don Draper kind of...
alcoholic, philandering sort of a jawline.
But it looks good today.
No,
it's got a lot of character, Graham. You can't argue with that.
He's got the kind of face that you don't see the stubble. You'd want to see the stubble. You'd almost want to come back tomorrow.
Yeah, you feel
and
cheated.
See how it arranged.
It's so neat and so precise.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I.
So come back tomorrow, guys, and see my stubble.
What's your pelvic area like?
We'll get into that in the next episode. Yeah.
Okay.
And scene.
Welcome, guys. Episode 223.
Pretty exciting. Back from being on the road.
Yeah, you were gone for 2 weeks.
Yes.
We released some fun banked episodes, the Alan Havey episode, and finally, back from the dead, the David Schmidt sound episode.
Oh, yeah.
That was like recorded in May that we found.
That one I knew, too, is when you were looking for it. And if I just hear you mumble and listen to the same sound clips over and over again, I know you can't find something.
Yep.
So that was when, like, let me just email Dave and see if he has another copy of it.
I can't find it.
And then, about 5 minutes later, hey, Chris, can you email Dave to see if he has it? Already done.
Done. I know you can't find it. I know it's lost.
Who's the technical end? You?
So no, it's Graham.
Yeah.
You're the technical end. How surprising. You think the guy with the glasses.
So, well, I do the website.
You do the website.
Yes.
But you don't know how to do the... Because I used to do a podcast, and that's what killed me.
Yeah.
Was I could never figure out the technical end, and then I was beholden to somebody that I didn't get along with, and we would always fight, and...
Let's get into that a little bit. This is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, Jason Nash. So tell us about your fighting podcast.
I had a podcast once, and so I would go in and
it was called I Fight With My Host.
What was it called?
It was called We're Making No Money. And so he just kind of hated everything I did. And then like if I would like post on Facebook about the show, he would be mad that I was posting on Facebook. He'd be like, why are you filling up everyone's feed? Like, and I'm like, because it's the show we're doing. And he's like,
you're promoting our show.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to know about it. Why are you promoting?
And he's a great guy. I mean, I still talk to him, but we just could not work together. And he was just... So then anyways, we split up. So then I couldn't take it anymore. We just couldn't get along. And then I had to try to figure out the technical end, and I would lose whole episodes. Oh. I would like interview Jeff Garland, and then it would be gone.
Every podcast has the lost episode story.
And it was just too much for me to...
How many have we lost? Was it just a couple?
Only one.
There's only one?
One or two.
Mike Siegel?
Mike Siegel. I don't think we lost.
That's no big deal. I'm joking, Mike.
One
I
got
love
repaired.
Mike.
That's right.
I had someone save a David Cross.
Yeah.
I had someone save a David Cross from the dead. I don't know how he got it back. It was gone. It was like ghosted on my GarageBand, and I sent it to some dude
and they just
Boston.
Pieced it back together. Like
I don't know what he
like
did.
Like audio CSI. They just put it.
That'd be a great name for a company. Audio CSI. You repair audio.
Or a show.
Yeah.
Right. That'd be a good show.
This file was murdered. And then you test
so
it out.
Are you doing another podcast?
No, I do not touch podcasts anymore. I'm done. Worst.
You're out?
I'm out. I can't stand it. I don't like the longevity of it. It doesn't end. You can do a good one, and then the next one is you got to do another one next week. and getting it up there. If I could just walk in maybe and do it, I guess I would do it, but I'm not in that situation.
It sounds like you still wouldn't do it.
Booking the guests. The guests are late.
Oh, yeah.
The guests are late when asshole guests are late. I mean, who would be late?
Yeah, you send him an email confirming 11 a.m. and yeah. I thought it was 8.
Yeah.
And there's no 8 anywhere in the email.
And the guest like shows no respect to your podcast. This is a thing that you've been working on for 2 or 3 years and like you built it from nothing. And then the guest is like, I don't fucking know when they do it.
Yeah.
Who would do that? What kind of jerk would do that? Doesn't make any sense.
Ass bag would do that?
Someone who only cares about themselves.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. But that's it. That was hard. It was hard to book people. Then people say no.
Yeah.
Jason Alexander said no.
Who cares, though? I feel like this. Like, we were having a discussion about a scheduling thing with someone, and they have a TV show or something like that. And I was like, why are we doing the show at night? And Chris texted me back, well, we need to accommodate the millionaires. And I wrote back, no, we don't.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, ha. Old business model.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I don't give a shit. If Fancy Pants McGee can't make it here, I don't give a shit. I could name 100 comics that would love to come in here and do it and be funny. So fuck.
At 11.
At 11.
Yeah.
Not 8. 8 o'clock time. Well, who would record a podcast? Who?
So you're saying you wouldn't arrange something for a list?
Not really.
A Seth Rogen or a.
Nope.
James Franco or
no.
Chris isn't saying anything. He's like, no, maybe.
Well, if they came in together, we would do it.
Together.
Well, and I would want to ask him why Green Hornet was such a piece of shit.
Oh, come on. The guy's made 20 great movies.
Sure. And,
no, we can ask him about you can have why one, but I didn't even see that one.
Yeah.
My friend is writing that movie, and I'm like, you're going to kill us all. Have you been seeing all that stuff about that movie?
Just the beginning where it's like, what is that, an act of war, really? You know, the North Korea, that's like when they're going nuts. What did Seth Rogen, he goes, normally people wait till they see my movies before they're
going
an act of war.
He's great.
So Jason, it's great to have you here. This is the first time on the podcast. You know, one little anecdote about Jason and I, we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
And we were at Aspen, the comedy festival, many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was a
time. We got blowjobs and a hot tub together, right? At the St. Regis.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And
Graham filmed it.
And this was the
it's
time.
It's on YouTube. Check it out, guys.
This was a time.
It's on Graham's YouTube channel and he won't take it down. Yeah.
Before cell phones and before cell phone cameras, and George Lucas was there, and I said, I need someone to take a picture of me with George Lucas with this film camera that don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to Jason Nash, and he took it. And the problem is with, you know, the film cameras, you're like, you have no idea if it came out or anything. Mm-hmm. And I said something very rude to Jason. I said, this better come out. Like, he was like a professional photographer that I had hired to take this one picture.
I don't remember that at all.
There's the picture. It's on the billboard.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one you took.
Jason S. took that photo. I think we need to scan and put that.
Yeah.
We'll post that to the Facebook
page. I will. I'll post it to the Facebook page.
Okay, Lucas looks really handsome, and you look like you're...
My hair was way longer. I will say, you just went, like a professional photographer, you went, no, I got it. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Shut up. Free photo.
You look like you're in Color Me Bad a little bit.
Yeah.
That was long hair, man.
Yeah, that was long hair.
It's nice. So when you're young, you can do it. You can have the long hair.
You can pull it off.
Yeah, now you got it nice.
Yeah, you got it. Once you have kids, it's got to get shorter.
You can't Color Me Bad anymore. Yeah, once you have kids and you live in the suburbs.
And Graham's always looked like a Marine sergeant.
Yeah.
Always.
Since he was 12.
Right.
Yeah.
Our Lee Emery hasn't changed his hair. He's still a drill sergeant. Our Lee Emery. You are a disgusting fat body. That's a quote from Full Metal Jacket.
Let's get into it. I really want to talk about these.
Real quick, I just want to thank anyone who came out to the. I did this. David Hunsberger has this show called The Junk Show. He does once a month. It was a lot of fun. Will Anderson was on the show. And, had some short films. It's really cool, and I did a character for it. It was really cool. So check that out. If you're in LA, go to David Hunsberger's. You know, various online presences. And
it's once a month.
Once a month.
Oh, cool.
Cool show. Check it out. All right, so let's get into it.
Yeah, let's talk about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes now. Neil loved this movie, and there's a review up on the site. I have not seen it yet, but you saw it.
Okay, I saw it last night. I saw it at my favorite movie theater.
Oh, okay.
The dine-in theater, mm-hmm. with the comfortable lazy boy, and they bring you food. It was mm-hmm. great.
Oh, the iPic?
No, this is the one in the marina, the AMC.
Oh, AMC.
Similar concept. Yeah.
It was awesome. I love the whole thing. So I think overall I really liked this movie. Mm-hmm. It was really like, what's his name? The mocap guy,
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis. He needs to get an Oscar nomination, or they need to create a mocap category or something,
yes.
Because it was his movie.
Right.
He's the lead actor in the film, and he's amazing. Like, he is amazing. And you know, it's 10 years down the road from the first one, from Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
So they just did some really, really cool stuff in it. I you know...
Has it been 10 years?
No, just in the storyline.
Oh, sorry.
I'm afraid they're going to run out of similes for this movie, though. Like, for when they keep making them. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet
right,
of the Apes,
yeah.
Beginning of the Planet yeah. of the Apes.
Yeah, it's all, brunch.
Yeah, brunch. Yeah. Start of the Planet of the Apes.
Siesta of
yeah.
the Planet of the Apes.
Rob Schneider. Siesta of the Planet of the Apes.
But you know, it was really cool stuff in there. There's some moments in here. I think you need to see this, Chris, so we can do a spoiler wrap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the things in there that I have, I don't even know that I would call them critiques, that I have questions about.
Okay.
We can't talk about them now because it would ruin the film. So we need to do a spoiler up. But I want to go back and watch the original one, because the original one to me, that was written by Rod Serling, is such hardcore social commentary. It is an indictment of the human race. You know, it really is. Like,
yeah, I remember.
Look what we've done. And this movie has obviously a lot of that, but then there's some stuff that happens within the apes that I was like, I don't know. My initial reaction was, no, this shouldn't be. It should just be a clear indictment of the human race. But then, again, we got to cover in a spoiler because it brings up other questions, and I'm just not clear yet on whether this really bothered me or if it was an interesting choice that the writers and filmmakers made. But overall, I think it's a good film. I remember Rise kind of caught me off guard because I was like, I don't know if this is going to be good, but Rise, right. I thought was a very good prequel. And, you know, with a prequel, you're in a tough position because the history is already written. It's already established what happens down the road unless you decide to change it like George Lucas.
Right.
And just say, oh, midichlorians.
Like you have, you have roadblocks. Like the story can't go past like a certain point.
Right, unless you just want to be like asshole filmmakers have done and just change shit.
Just reimagine it.
Yeah, which I don't think it should. And it's create, I mean, so they have to deal with that. And I think they've done a decent job with it, but I want to talk about it more. So I would recommend, overall, I say work it.
How is the CGI compared to the first one? Is it better?
It's much better.
Oh, it's better, really.
The CGI in this is really amazing.
Really?
There's some moments where you go, oh, there's CGI. But there's a lot of moments where you're like, holy shit. You know, and the scenes where the humans are interacting with them, that used to be the big, like, I can tell that the eye lines, it used to be off or whatever,
right.
Just in general with that technology. But it's really good now because I think they're just having these actors in these motion capture suits.
On the set, in the green suits.
In the green suits. So the eye lines, the regular actors are interacting with an actual person, another actor. So it's there. I don't know. I really overall liked it.
Oh, good.
Would Andy Serkis accept the mocap award as the ape?
As Caesar. I think he'd have to. I think he'd have to come out in a green suit with those
with the tennis ball things on.
Ting-tong balls on him. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think if you liked the first one, I think you'll like this one. If you didn't like the first one at all, I don't know if anything's going to change your mind.
Right. Well, the thing about Andy Serkis too, it's whenever you read an interview with him, it's so interesting. This, you know, he's like, he said, "Look, I thought Gollum was like a one-off, you know, kind of motion capture thing, and I would go back to obscure acting because he's been in movies, but he's never been a leading, you know, actor or whatever. He's always been like a supporting or a character role somewhere." And he said, "It's gotten to the point now where it's not only am I getting all these roles, but I'm being hired as a consultant on other movies on how to do it.
Yeah, it's a whole new. I mean, it's a brand new part of filmmaking and acting. Yes. And I think it has to be sort of recognized.
Yeah, and it's
and the Academy, I think, is will recognize it before they ever give a comedy award. Before they
probably
ever have a comedy category.
That show is so messed up anyway. I mean, there's no way to fix it because nobody cares. And you know, the only other way is
you gotta reimagine.
Then you have Best Kiss, and that's stupid too.
Yeah, right.
It's such a dumb.
Yeah,
it's never good. The Oscars are I can't remember when it was good. Maybe if the comedian is like great, like Letterman was great.
Mm-hmm. He's a good host. I thought Chris Rock was a good host.
Chris Rock was good.
Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin were fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
But yeah,
I like Tina Fey.
Yeah, she did a good job.
Tina Fey and Amy hosted the Oscars?
No, they didn't. No, that was something.
That was Golden Globes.
Golden Globes
is entertaining because you get TV and movies and people get drunk. Oscar's never good.
You know why the Golden Globes is like that is because the Golden Globes know that no one cares. Like, that's a different
thing. Well, the Golden
feel.
Globes wants to put on a good variety show.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The Oscars is
like, this is it. This is the pinnacle of Hollywood.
Well, it's a bunch of rich people patting themselves on the back.
Yeah.
Takes yourself way too seriously.
Yeah, yeah. And
for a show where the middle hour and a half is just a stupid, just drop of interest. No one cares. Foreign films no one's heard of. Best craft services.
That'd be great.
And whoever got the best payola. Hollywood Foreign Press.
All right, well, let's move.
Graham's new dumb mocap award.
Yeah.
The dumb mocap award.
I'm going to sit through this.
Oh, great. Graham likes mocap. Give it to the goddamn monkey again. All right, so what else of now? Earth to Echo.
Earth to Echo. Now this...
I saw that.
Did you see it with your family?
I did. I took my son and...
How many kids do you have?
I have two kids and it's awesome.
How old is he?
He's eight.
He's eight.
Now,
okay.
Now I might be saying it's awesome because I saw it with an eight-year-old.
Okay.
So do you have kids?
I do.
Okay. So is that fair to say to the audience?
No.
Okay.
I saw it with a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Okay.
And
what'd they think?
They liked it.
Okay.
They liked it. The way I can tell is my 6-year-old sat through the whole thing.
Okay.
So that's but here's the thing that we'll go through it in detail, but the most infuriating thing is this is a found footage movie. And that made me so almost queasy because some of the scenes I had to shut my eyes on. It was ridiculous the way it was shot. It was shot like a like Paranormal Activity or Blair Witch. And it was because the funniest thing my daughter said to me after the movie, because in the movie, the character is one of the kids, is like, he's like the director. He's like showing all the footage that of this, what happened.
Yeah.
And my daughter goes to me, you know, I wish the professional camera people would have shot that movie.
You are raising your daughter.
I really like that aspect of it. I loved it. I love that the narration that the kid was telling was really good. It was really spot on, and maybe it was jarring to you. Did you see it?
No.
I
did. It was called E.T.
Yeah.
It's a little E.T., but I thought that it was really good, the way he told the story, the way he was talking about his friends. I thought it emotionally touched me to the core that these three kids were best friends. I had friends like that we would ride our bikes to far distances. And, it didn't bother me at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it just didn't bother me.
Here was the kind of movie that I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, I can see the pitch. I could see what was appealing to this movie, and you just actually hit it on the head. I could see it like, you've got three friends, they have to move, and they have a bond. It's kind of like Stand By Me.
Yeah.
But then you add E.T. There's, you know, an alien that they have to find and help get home. And then you also have it brought into the... new century with all this new technology and the way kids are always on the internet, phones, and the way they post everything to YouTube. So I can see that pitch. I think none of that came together, and I think none of that gelled, and I think what it was is, it really didn't resonate with me at all. I really felt like it was a ripoff of E.T. I thought the characters were all, I felt it was a little bit contrived. And especially the villains, like, okay, the scientist.
You didn't like the goofy fat kid?
No, I did not like the goofy fat kid.
He was hilarious.
And they made him, like, extra kind of, like, weird. I'm like, no, let's just, you know, let these kids be kids. It's not the way it used to be. So I did not like the movie. My kids thought it was okay. My mom thought it was okay. But it really was. It was almost a scene-by-scene ripoff of E.T. with a found footage movie. It really was.
I don't remember E.T. at all.
Well, that might be
what's
that
E.T.? Was the reason. Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was anything like Mary Hart and John Tesh.
And I even thought the alien Echo didn't really even have that much of a personality because it was a CG thing. You know, it felt like a missed opportunity. Like I said, I could see the pitch, and I thought there were moments where I'm like, okay, the friendship of these kids, that's really what the theme and the core of this movie is, but it never got there. It never, like, gave us more than, like, the superficial glances into what the movie wanted to be.
2 hours where my kid's quiet, too, is really good.
Yeah, it's like you being in the comfortable theater. It's like, right. That's I get that, believe me. Like, oh, this is, I don't have to do anything for 2 hours.
Anything.
I can just sit here. So, yeah, I get that aspect of it. That always gets an extra star for
so
that.
So, sounds like...
it's not a disaster.
As a kidless person, that if you are listening, you have kids. It sounds like if you got kids, they're going to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, his kids didn't like his film snobby okay. kids didn't like it. Did they have their own kid nerds podcast?
They've already seen E.T. and I have a very strict viewing list for them at home for the
AFI Top 100. Yes. Your children.
That's what happens though.
Daddy, do we have to watch all of Deer Hunter?
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
So after that, Bambi.
That does creep in though when you have kids. That will creep in whether you. Yeah. Like it or not, your kids will start to criticize film.
Yeah.
Just like my kids will start to make vines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just happens. It's
Yeah. And it's funny, we all just watched together Honey, I Shrunk the Kids again, because that was streaming. And we watched that, and they had never seen it. And they're watching it, and I'm watching at the structure of this movie, and I'm thinking, you know what, this one, it's not a perfect movie, but you look at this movie, and like there was a real attempt at not only just making this a kids movie, making it a family movie. You've got literally a marriage and a family that's about to break up as you have, like, you know, the kids getting drunk or they're coming of age and trying to figure out their lives in the grass with, you know, ants chasing them and whatever. But it was, you could see where when a family movie, they make that attempt at making an actual family movie, or when it's just shovelware to, like, entertain kids for an hour and a half. There's really, you could see that difference of effort. You know, you've got a Groundhog movie that Jerry Bruckheimer makes, where they're secret agents, or you have Up. You know, they're very different family movies. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I thought this was, you know, kids might like it, but the found footage thing really, it was not necessary, and it made me a little sick to my stomach. So it's an okay kids movie, but if you really want to see a better kids movie with the same plot, just watch E.T. again.
All right. Well, let's move on now. Jason, you saw...
They Came Together.
They Came Together.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it on iTunes. I don't know if it's in the theater or what. Mm-hmm. But
it's definitely on demand.
Yeah, I rented it, and it was only available for rent. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I really loved it. Yeah, I thought it was really smart because, you know...
What's it about?
It's a parody of romantic comedies.
Oh, really?
So, okay. Yeah, so for you to say that, for you to go in and try to make that kind of movie, you know, it's going to be... Is it going to be like a Zucker Brothers movie? You know, that's your first thought, but I know it's David Wayne, so I'm like, well, I know David Wayne's not going to do that.
Right.
And they just did it really in a smart way where they kept it real enough and kept the story that you cared enough, but still did the jokes and still did the, just made fun of all the things about romantic comedies, you know, where the guys get together and are playing basketball, you know, and they're like, hey, man, are you going to go for it or what? You know, like Ken Marino's like dribbling really awkwardly. And then, you know, just all those things where Amy Poehler's the klutz. I'm the klutzy girl. And like they say that. And then you see stuff falling on her. And and I don't know. I just thought it was really good and really smart. And, I just love those guys. I love Michael Showalter. I think he wrote it.
Yeah, him and David Wayne wrote it together.
And
Wayne and Paul Rudd have done a million things together.
Yes.
And like Michael Ian Black is in it, and he plays the really...
A lot of the state guys.
Asshole boss. And I just think that David Wayne's comedies have been so good and a little bit underrated, because I don't think there's a lot of people making good comedies out there.
It's a hard thing to do, man.
Yeah.
And you know,
he directed a lot of episodes of Children's Hospital, and then he did
Role Models.
Yeah, Role Models, which is very funny. And
that's the one I haven't seen.
Wanderlust is really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it
Wet Hot American Summer obviously is his.
Wet Hot American Summer is insane. Yeah. I wish he would make another like more indie thing. That was the only thing about it, is it felt very studio, and there was like a lot of money spent, and Wet Hot was just so raw.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's the problem. Like, I didn't see Wanderlust, but the trailer, to me, the way they...
I didn't love Wanderlust.
Yeah, the trailer was cut, to me, I watched Wanderlust, and I went, just looks like a by-the-numbers studio comedy, and I'm wondering, like...
You know, now that I'm
But it
thinking
wasn't.
About
it was about something. It was. Right. It was about trading everything in and saying, screw work and screw the regular world. Let's go live on a commune.
You know, after listening to you guys now, I kind of have a little more insight into that movie now, because that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like David Wayne was trying to make indie scenes in this structure of like, no, you have to make it like this of a studio movie.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, in Wanderlust.
In Wanderlust.
And maybe that experience on Wanderlust led him to They Came Together.
Could be.
Saying, I want to just, which sounds great, because like you're saying, when he's kind of has a little more autonomy, like an indie film, like Role Models or something like that, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like a lot of, I mean, this is not necessarily, it's not his fault really, but when a big studio comes in and throws big money and there's big celebrities, you kind of have to.
You're getting notes.
Yeah, you're getting notes.
Yes.
You got to play ball with them. Yeah. You got to stick within their structure. And you're thinking that They Came Together sort of is out of that?
There's a studio hand in there.
Okay.
And, but that's what I think is really good about it too, is you care about what happens in the end. And often with a parody movie, you're like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, it's just a series.
Yeah, 40 minutes in, these jokes have all been made.
They've all been made. And I thought that was really impressive.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do, to keep the story going in a comedy, in a broad comedy.
Right. I just love the insanity of Wet Hot. And I would love to see him at one point just go back to that and, you know, just do one that's just like, oh, fuck it.
You know that
Bradley Cooper
development's late somewhere.
Yeah,
like,
Bradley Cooper.
I do.
Bradley Cooper making out with Michael Ian Black. I mean, in a tender, tender embrace. I mean, it's just so crazy.
Maybe there'll be a sequel. Or are they going to make that into a show?
No,
Wet Hot has been thrown around.
Yeah,
I've heard all these different.
It's in development somewhere.
Well, they made The Bachelor, which was like, I don't know. I thought that was really amazing too. Did you see that? The parody of The Bachelor? Mm-mm. It's called, anyways, Ken Marino's The Bachelor, and they got 20 female comedians being his suitor. One has one arm and one is crazy.
It was online.
Yeah. And then it was on E! For a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Ian Black plays the Chris Harrison,
I know,
really slimy host.
They did a Bachelor and a Bachelorette version.
Did they do a Bachelorette version?
Yeah, they did. There was a...
Who was the Bachelorette? Andrea Savage or... Natasha?
I can't remember.
Like, I know Natasha was in it. I know Andrea Savage was in it. It was all people we know.
It was all comedians. It was like That's a hilarious. Who's who of... Yeah, comedians.
Well, speaking of movies with who's of comedians.
We got to do a Harry's.
Come on.
Now, Graham, you have been very happy with the Harry's products.
I'm not joking. I shaved this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go 2-3 days. I've just been home either surfing or watching earbuds footage. So I haven't been interacting with society very much.
Yeah.
So I knew that was going to happen. So I needed to shave. I shaved. And as I've said before, I'm not lying. The Harry razors are like the best, because any razor my neck gets chewed up. It's just part of my body. But like, these razors are tight, and I had to reorder. And I ordered, I think it was 16 blades for $25, and then used the Comedy Film Nerds coupon code, and it's $20.
That's cheap.
Free shipping.
Yeah. For 16 blades?
Yeah.
Do you know what I pay for like a mock?
Dude, that's what I've been using. They're expensive as shit.
Oh my God. A stick and two blades, $17.
Oh, if you go to Costco and you get the 24 blade super pack, that's the best deal. It's still $50.
Yeah.
This is like $1.50 something a blade.
It's way cheaper.
And it's four blades. They're awesome.
So it's harrys.com, harrys.com, and the coupon code is comedyfilmnerds, $5 off. You will not be disappointed.
And Graham's face is...
I mean, we're looking at the evidence right there. Yeah, it's hard, you know.
It's perfect.
It's like looking at a pool ball. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The sheen coming off just his chin.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's like, this is getting weird.
It's like an awesome sea object that you found, like a loofah, and it's alive, but still at the same time.
It's like coral. It's a living
organism. It's like coral, yeah. You can't touch it enough.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, look at it. It has so much feeling. Yeah.
If Chrome had a face, that's what you'd be looking at.
Yeah.
So harrys.com, ladies and gentlemen. Now, let us talk about... Now, Jason, you have made a movie. And not that hard, right? Just kind of
simple.
Put it together?
Yeah. Simple.
Yeah.
Easy. Simple pimple, man. It was a six-day shoot and edit delivery.
Wow. Whoa. Like a 48-hour
film.
Yeah, it
took 6 days. Yeah, shot it, and it was just...
So this is
just
Jason
Just hit record,
Nash.
Really.
Is Matt... This is Jason Nash is married, and this has been a personal project of yours for now how long from start to finish?
I mean, I'd say the shooting and the editing was, and the for it to come out was 3 years. It was a year and a half to shoot, and then it sat for a year as Comedy Central was deciding when to put it out, and they kept pushing and pushing. And
so that deal was an early deal, and then it sat. So
yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So it was on the Comedy Central shelf for a little bit.
Well, I had
what were they going to do with it?
Well,
release it as a film or release it as a TV show? Or
I had shot... they'd give me some money to make a web series. And then I just started shooting a movie because the money was... I wasn't beholden to the money. And it was such a small amount of money. If they ever came after me, I would just pay it back.
Right.
So I was like, I'm just going to do what I want.
Yeah.
So I shot this movie... And kept editing, and then realized as I got into shooting a movie how hard it was to shoot it for $10,000. Right. And then would work, make some more money, put it into the film, take a job, and then when it was done, I called them and I just said, "Hey, this is done. Do you wanna?" It took them a really long time to look at it and decide.
And did they say, "Where's my web series?"
No, they didn't at all. They didn't care.
Oh, that's
they
great.
Didn't care. And then eventually it got to the higher ups there and they were like, this is great. This is going to be our first digital movie and da 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 da. And I really thought it was dead. I thought, it'll never go anywhere. And I didn't get into any festivals.
You submit to festivals?
I did.
Really?
I did. And it made me really mad. I was like, cause I know it's good. And I know that,
you know, watching it, I'm like, oh, I could see this easily playing festivals.
Yeah,
that surprises
me.
And then
it came out, and we were like in the top 10 on iTunes like first couple days. I didn't even think we'd break top 100. And then just been promoting it through Vine and Twitter. And then we got...
Wait, did you just send it to Sundance and Telluride?
No, I sent it to a lot of places.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Festivals are hard.
That makes no sense.
What's that? I mean, it's weird. And then it did so well. We're going to be at IPIC in Pasadena and Westwood for 2 weeks. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's been good.
Where can people get it?
You can get it on iTunes and Amazon right now. You can rent it or buy it.
Will a DVD be released?
I don't think so. Maybe. Maybe.
It's just digital right
just
now.
And
digital.
Then if you live in LA, you can see it at IPIC. Are there any other theaters around the country that are showing it or will be?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, so tell us about how it came to be and what made you want to shoot it and how it parallels your own life.
I was doing stand-up with Graham at M-Bar.
Yeah.
And then going to my car and putting a gun in my mouth after every show. After I'd watch Graham kill and I would die. Or Graham would roll in off the street. What not booked, and he'd be like, yeah, I'll go up if you have room, and be like, all right, go on up, and he would kill, and then I'd be like, good job, Graham. And then I was so miserable and so down and out, and I never really wanted to be a stand-up. I just like comedy. I really just wanted to make a film. And then I was just living this life of failure. and I started to write a script about that. That was really close to myself, and I thought this is actually easy to shoot if I can just find someone to play my wife. I cold emailed Busy Phillips, who I didn't know. I was like, I have this idea. You play my wife. And she came over and she met my wife, and like she's a really good actress. She immediately had my wife down in like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then we just started going, and she just took on the exact way my wife treats me, which is sort of above me a little bit. And then that was it. And we started to add, I just tried to add as many people that could, that
well, your
fun,
cast
funny
is
friends.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
You've got
obviously
hilarious
yeah
people in this movie. Like the cast is great. And honestly, the relationship between you and Busy was really, I was like, wow, this is a really cool dynamic. And it is a dynamic, like, I don't know. It looks real. That's what I say. Like,
good,
I don't
good,
know you and
good
your wife, but I'm like, I've seen that dynamic in a married couple before.
Yeah.
With where like a buddy of mine is a comic or an artist of some kind, and the wife is like, yeah, that's great. Where are the paychecks
yeah
to pay
yeah
for the kids? Like,
your movie very mm-hmm resonated. It resonated.
Good.
It definitely
good
did.
Good.
I was like, oh, that looks familiar. That looks familiar.
And so, yeah, we just kept shooting and trying to get, I would call like Nick Swartzen. I'd be like, can you come Saturday at 1 o'clock to my manager's office? And,
right.
And he was like, well, I'm on the road, but yes. And then we would put it off. And then, you know, in that waiting time, you're like, oh God, I hope he can come.
And what else can I shoot in the meantime?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he came and we did that scene and then it was good. And you know, I'm envious that you guys are going through your movie right now and
yep
ready to edit, because to
we
me
just
that's
got back from Australia and Japan.
You did?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Shooting. Yeah.
Just been watching footage. I've been watching footage the last 3 weeks and just writing notes and starting to piece together what the story and themes are.
Who's the Marc Maron of Japan?
Well,
we went to see fans.
We interviewed fans.
Oh, fans of American podcasts. I gotcha. Mm-hmm. Is it just about your podcast or all, a lot of other
no
ones?
All podcasts.
All podcasts.
It's about podcasts.
How many interviews did we do?
140.
140 interviews.
Yeah. Who gave you the best stuff so far?
Oh, it's hard. I mean, we've got
a lot of good stuff.
The footage I was just watching, Paul Gilmartin has a great interview talking about mental illness happy hour. Because
yeah
as we started shooting, interviewing fans and stuff, there was this clear theme that like a lot of people listen to podcasts to help them get through depression or mental illness or something like that.
Sure.
And so, you know, I already knew I was going to interview Gilmartin, but then because his podcast is so unique, and then, you know, he just had a great interview talking about, and I've known Paul for like 20 years. So that interview was great. Todd Glass has a great interview. I mean, Aisha Tyler has an amazing interview.
Everybody has a podcast too, so you can fit so many great people in.
And the fans were, the stuff that they were saying was really insightful and amazing, that yeah just how it affected them. And that's one of the reasons we went to Australia and Japan, was mm-hmm to talk to them. And just how, what was the one you have, like, was a drill sergeant?
Yeah, yeah. Lucas Lundsman, who's mm-hmm been a fan of the show for a long time, he was deployed in, he did 3 deployments, I believe, to Iraq. He's in the Army, and he was like, yeah, one of them, he was like in a sniper team, like he's the hardcore infantry. And he was listening to our show over there. And now he's been as like a drill sergeant. Now I think his job is sort of changing a little bit. But anyway, he just recently got stationed at a base in the Midwest, and we interviewed him. And to hear his take on it, like you're sitting there, like we interview like a big fan of ours, Sanai, and she's like, what would a Japanese housewife and an American drill sergeant, what could they possibly have in common? Turns out it's podcasting,
mm-hmm,
and they relate to it on the same level.
Sure.
And have the same interests. And so that was really cool. But
I could never get my wife to listen to a podcast.
But the thing I wanted to, getting back to your film, is like, how much of this was scripted and how much of it was improvised? Because I feel like you had a lot of very solid comics who were really skilled at improvisation. Like, how did you have like a full script and then you kind of let people play with that? Or
we had a full script and then they would get there and just sort of make it their own.
Right.
Because we just didn't have a lot of time.
Right.
So you'd like show Paul Tompkins 3 pages.
Right.
And he'd be like, okay, 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 I'm ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're just like, he did what the scene needed, but he also right made it his own. And
sure.
And I think that's, you know, I like that. That's how I like to do it. Well, change it however you want.
And I don't think people realize how not everyone can do that. Like,
no, that's a
really
skill.
Amazing, classically trained actors. When you ask them, like Meryl Streep couldn't do that. And that's not a slam on her. I'm just saying she couldn't. Like, I've heard interviews with her where, and classically trained actors or whatever go, oh, I got to write the script too? Like, just give me the lines. And
yeah.
I'll, you know what I mean? Whereas the comics, we sort of almost take pride in the fact that we can kind of come in and do that. And I think that's a skill that just doesn't get as much appreciation as it should.
No, it
yeah, totally. I had a part for a drug addict.
Saw it firsthand when we were talking about Asylum. Mm-hmm. I just say whatever you want. Really? Is that what improv is?
Yeah.
You're saying whatever you want?
What movie is that?
Oh, it's a whole... If you listen to a couple episodes ago, I go with the whole story that I made a horror movie and then how it got unmade and... Bulgaria. And oh, I want to give people an update on that too. People have been emailing and they found the page. It got released in Japan. It's called SWAT versus Devil. And Sanai is actually going to bring me a copy. So
oh.
I can't wait to see it at the podcast festival. And then people are like, I hope this gets released. I'm like, yeah, so do I. I don't know
we
if it ever will.
So what happened? You made a movie and then
well,
it was...
We went through it. It's quite a story.
But anyway, but like, so then what was that process like in terms of, it wasn't like you had a 3-week shoot and you banged it all out. You had to kind of, whenever these people were available.
Yeah, whenever they're available.
So you were stop and start production pretty much.
Yeah, shoot a bunch, write some more, shoot a bunch, and then just keep, I don't even know how we did it. Just like it's just like a real Hail Mary. Like, oh, I don't know. And then doing it, you're like, oh, is this going to ever go anywhere?
Now, one thing I really liked about the movie is that, you know, you could have easily copped out and just made a bunch of funny sketches about marriage and your life and your career, but you didn't. What it is not only are there a lot of funny scenes, you tied it together emotionally with your voiceover and also with your relationship with your wife and how going through all these different things affected you. Now, you have voiceover throughout the movie. Was that in the script? Did you kind of add that later? How did that come about?
I added that as I went.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a way to tie it all together.
Okay. So it wasn't, the whole thing wasn't on the page. You were pretty much commenting as you were shooting.
Yep.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Just saying what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was the way I thought I could pull it together. I mean, look, it's for the amount of money that we shot it, I'm proud of it, but I would never do a movie that way again.
Yeah,
you know, it's just too hard.
Yeah,
completely understand.
Says that.
Yeah, everyone says.
You know, then again, I might. Like, if I couldn't get money for the next one, I'm gonna make another movie. So if I have to, but there were some really cool things about it. Like Andy Dick was supposed to play the drug addict part that Matt Walsh played, and he didn't show up.
That's weird.
He's unreliable. Andy Dick.
And then Walsh showed up. And he, you know, he did it again when we were talking about what you asked about, just looking at the page. Like, he just did it so real, and I was like, "Oh wow, so much better."
Mm.
You know what I mean? Than someone being crazy, and so that was cool.
T.J. Miller did a really nice job on it too.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
he is amazing, and I've been watching him on Silicon Valley. And
now, who was the biggest get that you think that you were like, oh, I'll never get this person, and then they're in the movie?
Probably busy,
yeah,
because without her there's no movie. Once she said okay, mm-hmm. then everyone else said okay.
And how was it shooting around like her, like how did you get a lot of her scenes, because she's probably pretty busy, I would imagine.
And that's actually how she said how she got her name. She renamed herself Busy. That's her. That was in an interview she said that, because it was always doing stuff.
What was the question?
Yeah, how was it shooting around like her schedule and stuff like that?
Yeah, she would just show up on her days off. She was incredible. Like, so nice.
Because she's in a lot of scenes. I mean, that was a major role in the film.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, oh, because I know she's what was on Cougar Town, and when you were shooting it, I'm sure she was on a show too.
She was on Cougar Town.
She was on Cougar Town.
She was doing Cougar Town. And then she would just show up. She would bring her kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was it like doing the whole process of doing this movie in terms of your actual marriage and family? How did that?
It really tore it apart. It was really hard because I was shooting in my house, in my wife's house. And my wife's house, if you see the movie, that's what she's really about in the movie, is having a nice house. And I don't care about that. So it was like people were scuffing the walls and there was always people there. And then I'm not making any money because I'm shooting a film, and it's a very brazen attempt to just, it's like, fuck my kids, fuck my wife, I'm making this movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it was all reliant, and it was like, if I don't make this movie, I'll kill myself. Like, I'll be miserable. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, this is what I'm doing. And I feel bad about that. But the end was really great. Like, we had a great moment where she called me like a couple days after, and she's like, you went from number 36 to number 18 on iTunes, and now you're 12. And I was like, yeah, I know. I've been like checking it every 5 minutes.
It's like your Amazon ranking.
You know, of course I'm checking it. And I was like, you've been checking it too? And she's like, yeah. She's like, of course. She's like, this is the greatest thing ever. And that was amazing. That was amazing that she...
Well, how's your relationship with your wife and kids now?
I mean, really good. I mean, I have a touch of like mental illness. So trying to write stuff is really hard for me, because if somebody starts talking to me, I'm done for the day. So that's like Sunday, I was trying to write something, and then they kept coming in, and it made me insane. I get derailed. I don't know if you guys get derailed, but I do. And but things are good. I'm a good dad. I spend endless amounts of time with them. And that's it. I don't know.
Right on.
Things are good.
That's great.
Well, Jason Nash is married, guys. Check it out.
Congratulations. I mean, you could see this was not only a labor of love, but how difficult it was to put together, and the fact that you pulled it off is very impressive.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, guys.
Finishing a movie.
It's just finishing a movie alone is an amazing achievement.
And I can't wait to do it.
And you
guys are going to be psyched.
yeah, we're very excited.
And so are you going to premiere it at the podcast festival?
Yeah, we're going to show it there. I don't know. We'll see. You know, the movie will be done probably, hopefully, like March.
It'll definitely be shown there. I don't know if it'll premiere there.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Right, you might show it early.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably have some premieres in L.A. before then, but we'll definitely show it to anyone who comes to the festival.
Yeah.
Please, you know, let me know. Invite me to the premiere and stuff.
Sure.
I donated.
Thanks.
Oh,
I did.
You.
Just so you know.
Thanks,
just so you know.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
We love the
I wanted to throw that in there.
well, right on. Well, all right. Well, let's see what we got coming out on DVD.
Rio 2 is awful. I sat through it. You know,
One of the ones we were talking about. Just shovelware. You just throw it on.
I'll tell you a true story about Rio 2. I'm driving down Sunset Boulevard. My wife and I have an hour to ourselves, and we're having a nice time because we got a sitter for the morning. I think we went to a workout class, and there's a big sign for Rio 2. And I go, I swear to God, out loud, I go, what a piece of fucking shit. Like that. Rio 2. What a piece of shit. An hour later, I was at Rio 2. I was at Rio 2. Because my wife was like, I got to get my hair done because I'm aging and I need to do everything I can to still look pretty. And I will not put that fight down. And so I took the kids, and I my mania was like kicking in that day. Like, my medication wasn't working. And it's like, and Dolby, like all kinds of birds, and Gilbert Gottfried, and awful, unwatchable. But maybe it's good
because the first one was such a classic.
Yeah, well, I mean,
did you see the first one?
Oh yeah. I took my kids to that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. The you're not missing anything by missing these movies. Let's just put it that way.
Did your kids like it? My kids loved it.
The first one, they were like lukewarm on it. But the second one, we didn't see. I was like, at some point, I have to put my foot down.
Yeah, good for you.
It's like, you know, we have a whole library here. You're going to watch Iron Giant again. Yeah.
I should talk to you about
Castle
kids
in the
films.
Skies.
Yeah, or Kafka.
Yeah.
Is that a kids movie, Castle
so
in the Sky?
We'll give you a book.
Yeah, please.
It's
the book you wrote.
It's a whole chapter on kids movies.
You guys have done so much. You're so prolific. Books, movies.
Exhaustion, constantly.
When's the TV show coming?
Well, those assholes won't hire us, so we got to do our own shit, man. If regular Hollywood wants to give us jobs, we'll take them. But in the meantime, we need to eat, so we're going to make our own shit. All right, what's Under the Skin? What is that movie?
This is the Scarlett Johansson movie.
No.
Not Lucy, no. Where she gets something put under her skin.
Johansson,
this is
so
more
Scarlett Johansson.
She's like an alien that eats people's skin through a pool or what? Something. It's a very odd, artsy kind of horror movie. And here's how I know it was maybe a little too artsy is Neil was lukewarm on it. Like, Neil, like, he's one of our reviewers for the site. Yeah. And he's like, he loves these kinds of movies. And he just kind of shook his head a little bit. I'm like, I don't know.
She wears people's skin or something?
Well, she eats it. That's
Scarlett Johansson eats people's skin.
Yeah, but not... But, again, this is
just really but rang through like a
weird through like a weird pool. Like she finds strangers, and I think it's shot in the UK.
I believe. Swimming pool,
but filled with this weird liquid.
It's the director that did Sexy Beast.
Sexy Beast is awesome,
which is a great.
You know what? Read the description of this film.
Sexy Beast is a good movie. I would see Sexy Beast again.
All right, here's the description for Under the Skin. A mysterious woman seduces lonely men in the evening hours in Scotland. Events lead her to begin a process of self-discovery. That has nothing to do with what nothing you to just do said.
Yeah, that's not at all what the movie is.
That's just like, none of it makes any sense.
You got it mixed
up? That joke I do on stage. It's like a group of miners have an interesting dinner. Alien.
Yeah.
Like, so you got it wrong.
So, now, if you watch the trailer, you'll see it's like, oh, this is a little more going on there.
IMDb got it wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, IMDb got it wrong.
Well, listen, this Scarlett Johansson is a knockout.
If you go down just for one more second, now go to like either a comment or a review, and there'll be probably something like, what the fuck? Or
wow. Interesting how it worked. There's a whole long review. Jesus, this person did one of these like five.
Oh yeah, one of the 5-page IMDb reviews. But anyway, it's a weird artsy sort of horror relationship odd movie that
horror relationship artsy.
Yeah,
where you just combined every genre.
Well, that's what this movie
martial art science film documentary love story.
Yes. And
that takes place on ice.
So read Neil's review, and if you're still inclined, rent the movie. If you're that
I have to
that
watch
curious
this now, because
I mean,
no
I'm very
sense.
Curious. I want to see it. I just haven't had a chance to.
I'm always impressed with her, and not just because she's beautiful. I've never seen her not. I've liked her in everything
she's
in.
A very good
even the
she
I mean,
she doesn't phone it.
The
in.
Superhero movie.
Yeah, she doesn't phone it.
When
in
I knew
either.
She was going to be in that, I was like, oh come on.
Yeah, yeah.
She's unbelievable.
Even like the little cameos, like in Iron Man, where it's like you know we know she's Black Widow, but she's not doing anything yet. But you're still like, okay, I still want to see her.
It's why I really want to see Lucy, which is coming out later in the summer. Yeah. That movie looks interesting. All right, here's what's coming out this week: The Purge: Anarchy. Okay. We discussed obviously whatever last summer, two summers ago, the first Purge. We very much I like the concept. We cut it some slack because
the premise was so strong. The execution, we cut it a little slack.
We cut it slack because we knew it was a low budget, $3 million. They shot it in like 3 weeks in that house.
Yeah.
So the Purge: Anarchy looks like
I'm a big fan of Ethan Hawke too.
Yeah.
I have to say, I like Ethan him Hawke. And stuff.
The Purge: Anarchy looks like we're going to actually see what's really going on.
And the rest of the city.
The rest of
the world. Hopefully the world.
And hopefully the world. And it looks like we're going to really see... Because the point of the first one was obviously like, this isn't really working. Violence doesn't solve anything. And it sounds to me like they're going to just take that to the next level, obviously with a bigger budget since the first one did so well. And Anarchy is going to just be like, you're going to really see how this concept wouldn't work.
It's also a great indictment of American culture.
Yeah.
What? I don't even know what you're talking about. The Purge. I've seen the signs, and I know there's a siren going off.
Here's what it is.
What is it?
It's set in the future,
yeah.
And America had so much crazy violence and crime, and everything went out of control. So they set this thing once a year for 12 hours. You can commit any crime. There's no cops or fire. You can murder. You can
no ambulances. Nothing.
Nothing. And they once they started doing that,
the crime rates all
the crime rate dropped.
Because everyone waits for that time to go kill their boss or do whatever they want to do.
Do whatever they want to do.
So the rich people, what they do is they have these elaborate security systems to put in their home, and they just lock down. And then what they do is then the poor people, they have to go kill each other or try to survive.
And so in the first movie, you hear this sort of, they use it through listening to a radio show of people are pro and con, and and they kind of touch on just through what you're hearing on the radio what society is doing with it. So now but it was a very low budget film and it was shot in a short amount of time. So now this one is the sequel because the first movie did really well, and now you're going to see everything. So I would see the first The Purge,
mm-hmm.
and then go see this. But I want to see this because I'm curious to see now with some money how they're really going to depict how, you know, broken and crazy America society is.
Is this the movie with Schwarzenegger and Stallone and Harrison Ford?
You're thinking of The Expendables.
Expendables. Sorry.
Which is a version of The Purge.
Yeah.
Did you see they added like more people
of
to
course,
The Expendables?
Yeah. They, Wesley Snipes.
They added. I just saw a picture. There's like 40 of them.
Yeah. Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at those movies, especially the third one, you go, well, why wouldn't you?
Of course.
Why wouldn't you add all those people?
But how do they pay for all those people? Like, doesn't it get expensive to have...
They made a lot of money.
Those
first
movies
made
do
a lot
crazy
of
money.
Yeah, and this is supposedly the last one. And it's the only movies that people will go see Sylvester Stallone in. Yeah. Unless it's Expendables or, Rocky. That's, no one wants to see him be an action star anymore. Like, Bullet to the Head. No one cares.
That prison thing.
Yeah, with prison, or even like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like Last... And, again, no one cares. Retro or forget it.
Yep.
Have you guys ever had any problems with your criticism? Like, has anyone ever come after you or like said, like, hey, you were too harsh on my movie? Or,
I mean, actual stars or movie?
Your producers, or have you had that yet?
No.
Not yet.
Mm-mm.
I don't
see it happening.
How do you look at criticism?
What do you mean?
What's your opinion of it? Like, how do you come at it?
I look at it this way. I've never viewed myself or even this show. I don't view myself or this show as like, movie critics. We started this whole show because we're stand-up comics who are also filmmakers, and these are just how we would talk about movies, like in a green room.
Mm-hmm.
So we just like, that's kind of how the show started and the website started, was let's talk about it. Because
but we also went to film school, and these are educated opinions about film.
Yeah, to me it's and I also just, the way I go into every movie, I want every movie to be great.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have fun. I want to walk out of the theater and go, that was awesome. And I'm also a comic, so when it sucks, I'm going to bury it. I'm going to make fun of it.
Right.
But we never go into a movie cynically, with the exception of a couple of...
Which ones?
Anything that Michael Bay directs. But you know, we always, like Graham said, whether it's a popcorn movie or like Under the Skin, we want it to be good.
Because
no one benefits more than us, because we see so many movies, and then when we see a great one that surprises us or does something different, mm-hmm. we get more excited. Like, people ask us too, can you even watch a movie and just enjoy it? And the short answer is, well, we're definitely more critical on it. But when we see something we like, we enjoy it even more.
Yeah.
So we're even more excited. Like, even like the last Captain America movie, I thought was fantastic. I enjoyed the shit out of that movie, watching that movie. And this is like, well, it's just a popcorn movie. No, it isn't. It's a great movie, and it's a fun summer movie. And that's exactly how you do fun summer movies.
And also, like, a film critic, like Leonard Maltin doesn't make movies. He doesn't perform. He's not an artist.
Right.
He's just a film critic, and that's fine. I'm not criticizing that. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's why I view myself, or this show is, or Chris and I, is different, because
we come from more from an art.
We perform, art, and artist, we have people have written shitty reviews about this podcast online,
right? Yeah.
So,
and all of our other works, there's plenty of reviews that aren't positive.
Yeah,
sure, we've all had that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I always say this: until you get a bad review, no one's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the truth. It's like, until you start getting,
Will you review your own movie?
Yeah.
That is an excellent question. And the answer will probably be yes.
Yeah, of course I will. I'll slam it.
Yeah. Just say what the filmmakers could have done better.
just bag on Chris, though.
Bag on my. Earbuds would be like, this director had no idea what he was doing, traveling around countries. What an idiot. All right, let's move on. Sex Tape. I'll say, here we go.
Yeah.
This is a movie. Why is it being made?
It looks like one of those.
Real quick, too, to answer your question, Jason.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge anybody for taking a gig for a paycheck. I get that.
Yeah.
I hosted strip poker. Like, I get it. I get
Somebody
came to me and said, Graham, do you want to do this?
Yeah, I know. If Hitler had a game show,
I would fucking host it.
I know you don't. I don't think you do that.
I don't care.
I know you don't. I know you as a person. I know you're very reasonable.
Yeah. But I get mad when they take the audience for granted.
Uh-huh.
And just like slap it together and don't give a shit when it's
fuck
like...
Fuck it, this is all they deserve.
I paid 12, 14, 15... Yeah, like last night, I paid $15 to go see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Right.
You went to the fancy theater, though.
I do. Yeah. Sure, but even if you're paying 10 or whatever.
Sure, sure. No, it's a lot of money.
If I'm gonna spend that money, give me an effort.
Uh huh. Which you did see. You liked the movie.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it. Sex Tape looks like it shouldn't have been made.
Can't argue with that.
We're more critical of
speaking
comedies.
Of the next one. Also, shouldn't have made Planes. I remember when we had Carlos Alice Rocky in here when they were doing the Cars spinoffs, Planes, and he goes, "No, there's going to be three of them." And then at the time, I thought, "Is there really going to be three of them? Maybe halfway through development, they'll see how the first one does, and they'll kind of cancel or slowly can the next two."
Nope.
They're making three. They made them all at once, and they're going to slowly release them, whether your children want them or not. So, and this one looks even worse than the last one. So I will not be seeing, nor will my children be seeing Planes. They've seen the trailers. They have no interest in seeing it. Mm-hmm. Either one, 9 or 6. So.
Again, your kid's very sophisticated. I know. My kids will be eating that up. Oh my God. Please, can we pre-order it, Daddy? Daddy, can we pre-order Planes, Fire and Rescue?
Now, do your kids like the Lego movie?
Are you fucking shitting me?
Yeah.
Of course.
No, that was a great movie, though. That was the first movie that my six-year-old said, "Can we buy that?" Like, that's the, like, he really wanted to own that movie. So that's, that's a great movie. That's a great example of, like, how you make a family movie that everyone can watch and enjoy this movie.
Yeah. That, when I saw it, it was all 20-year-olds.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Like laughing their ass off.
It's like when you go to a Pixar movie. You know, Pixar movies have late night showings.
Yeah.
It's all ones with, it's for people that want to see the Pixar movies without kids in the audience.
Yeah. I felt like telling them to grow up a little bit.
Yeah. Like, did you have your kids with you?
Yeah. There was a row of them behind me like, "Oh, yeah, we're still kids." Mm-hmm. No, you're not. Go get a fucking job.
Yeah.
All right. Also coming out next week is Wish I Was Here, which is the Zach Braff Kickstarter movie.
Oh, I love this conversation.
He made $3 million, I think.
$3 million, yes. Yeah.
The goal was $2 million. He made $3.1 million. He had 46,000 backers. And now we obviously talked about this a little bit when we were running our Kickstarter. And, you know, some people were like, "Oh, these movie stars shouldn't be able to do it." I think it's great.
I do too.
I think it's go for it.
I don't have any problem with it.
I don't have any problem at all.
And the reason is, I think that comes from a misunderstanding of what Kickstarter is.
Sure.
Like, I think, like, people think, "Oh, well, why are the people giving them money to make the movie?" And people aren't giving money to make the movie. What they are is they're pre-buying a product that they want to see.
Right.
And so...
But they're not getting a copy of the movie.
Yeah, they are. Of course
they
are.
Some of them are.
Yeah, it depends on the tier.
Screenings, you're getting t-shirts.
You're not getting physical copy, though.
Depends. Some of them do.
No, not in that one. I checked it out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. We've done that.
What about digital copy?
You can get it. You can go to a screening. You have to pay a lot of money. You can get a stream. There's going to be a one night at 8 o'clock. You go into like a Ustream account and you can watch it.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's an interesting way to.
Yeah, he's got a lot of advanced screenings in cities all over the world.
Now, where he got some criticism was where, like, not only then did he have. He got $3 million on a Kickstarter campaign. Then he sold the movie for like $4 million and there's no investors to pay back.
Yeah.
So,
why are you?
I don't think that's really a fair criticism. I mean, this is kind of how he did it and this is how he wanted. I mean, no one was forced to, you know, buy a tier.
Well, that's the other thing, brought 46,000 people to Kickstarter. How many of those had no idea what Kickstarter was and came just because they're like, "Oh, Zach Braff.
Right.
I'm in." Yeah. You know what I mean? So, to me, it's like, how can you be mad? He did it. People wanted it.
Right.
I agree.
He's not scamming anybody.
Now, if out of those 46,000 people, if 40,000 of them were crying like, "Hey, I got scammed. I never got my stream or whatever," then okay. Yeah, that's a legitimate complaint.
Screenings didn't happen. It's bullshit. Yeah. But no, I mean, you know, it's all spelled out there what you're getting. You get the soundtrack. You get all this stuff. So to me, it's great. And I'm...
Kickstarter is one of those sites that when it first came out, it was like, well, this is kind of like, how does this work? What is this? Would people even do this? And you'd look at it and realize how brilliant it is.
How much did you guys ask for?
135.
135, and we got like 139.
And did in a couple of days before, were you not there yet?
No.
An hour before.
I think I remember seeing that on Facebook, like you guys were...
It was a fight to the wire.
We funded with 30 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so... having gone through that, I mean, obviously, so...
we will never do it again if we can avoid it.
Never say never.
Wish I Was Here, though. I liked Garden State.
I liked it too.
Came out,
yeah,
I don't know, a while ago, but I'm excited to see.
Now this isn't a sequel, but it does kind of explore some of the same themes. But I really want to see this movie too. I loved Garden State. I thought it was great.
I like Zach Braff, you know what I mean. Here's the thing about him: why I'm puzzled why more actors haven't never done this throughout Hollywood history. Makes the big crazy network money doing a sitcom. It's syndicated. Yes. And then go do your artistic stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why people get the big, they get the big paychecks and then they keep doing and they're like, oh, these are the only scripts that are offered me and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, go make your own thing. Like,
yeah, but a lot of people are multi-hyphenates. They're just not.
Yeah, you're right. They just don't have that thing.
Right. They don't have the desire or the ability.
Like, you look at, like, you know, there's a lot of movies that Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, and Rita Wilson that, you know, they're producers on that. They're not necessarily even in. A lot of these bigger actors become stealth producers anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're talking about. It's like, and it came from a desire to control the material that was, mm-hmm, you know, being offered to you, and actually to control some of the production, which is really smart. And Jodie Foster is a great example of, mm-hmm, that too, the way with her production company. So I think the smarter ones do, but I agree with you. I'm like, why don't more people do
it? That's what Jason's well? Right, though.
Yeah.
Most people just, it's not... Why don't they? They just don't have that thing to want to be like, all right, I'm going to make my own thing and produce and write and direct, which we've all done on small scales.
Right.
That's a shit ton of work.
Right.
And even if you're getting paid good money, it's a crazy amount of work. And most people just don't have that thing.
Or you could look at it the other way, which is like, most people aren't crazy like we are.
Yeah. They're
sane. And narcissistic and have like a burning need to tear their family down to make a movie.
And have such a high tolerance for failure that we do.
Yeah, it's true. So people like to go out in their boats and you know, travel to Mallorca.
And have a 401k.
Yeah.
I get that too. It's easy for me to say it. And I, you know, had I bounced from big TV, like had I started doing like network sitcoms, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Would I have wanted to come in a garage and hustle and bust our ass and do a festival, or would I have just
gone? That's right.
Eh. I need to go surfing in Tahiti.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly right.
Maybe.
That's exactly right.
Good point. Good point. All right. Well, wish I was here. Go see it, guys. I think that's our program, ladies and gentlemen. This was a fine show.
Fine program. Happy to have Jason here first time.
Thank you
first
so much for having me. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, Jason, once again, tell people where they can find your movie online and all your online business.
Just iTunes and Amazon Instant.
And it's Jason Nash is Married.
Mm-hmm, that's the name of it.
Do you have Twitter, Facebook places?
Jason23Nash. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Vine. If you're on Vine, it's Jason Nash.
Now that's where you have the most followers, is
that's
Vine,
right? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, that is our program. Thank you so much. Of course, Chris and I are going to be at Comic-Con next week.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
A lot of stuff
to announce.
Well, you're doing...
Yes, I'm doing the Thrill Bent panel. We'll be announcing my new comic book series with Mark Waid's company.
Fancy pants.
And that will be in room 8 at 5:30. And the other thing, it's also going to be half of a pitch panel, so you get to pitch Mark Waid and on your comic book idea, and he's going to pick one to develop for the site.
What?
So, wow. So this is a digital comic book that
digital
you do.
Comic book company.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. They started. Mark Waid started it with John Rogers, and it's going into their second or third year. And I was able to get one going with them, and I'm really excited about it. I've always wanted to do a comic book, so to actually get to do one, it's like a dream come true.
So
I can't wait. And then also,
so I see why that weight bench just has a bunch of stuff on it.
Yeah,
just been focusing on the podcast the comic book
on the not lifting weights. Yes, I've been focusing on that,
but it's good. It holds up a lot of stuff, that weight bench.
It is.
And you know what, if you ever go back to it, should weigh the same.
Yeah,
shouldn't break. So, and then we're doing Rick Myers' Kung Fu Extravaganza.
This is our third or fourth year.
I think it's third.
Third year.
Jeez, what do you guys do?
It's so fun.
Do you have, what do you have so much going on?
We just love being a part of anything.
Yeah, of anyone that'll have us.
What's
let
it?
Us do
it's
stuff.
A Kung Fu fight? What is it?
It's
yes, Chris and I are going to be in a Kung Fu
you guys
fight.
Going to a dojo? And you're doing
in front of 10,000 nerds in costume.
So Rick Myers has been doing this Kung Fu extravaganza for like, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing about it, he brings like obscure martial art movies from like Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah, sure,
that aren't being shown here. And so we've learned about really cool movies. Like we saw clips of the Grandmaster and Ip Man and all that stuff. And then we met Eric Jacobus, who did his rope-a-dope. And
that was hilarious. He's doing a sequel to that.
God, he makes funny shit. So it's really...
In fact, we have Rick Myers' book and also Eric's movie, Death Grip. We have those in the store right now.
So this is like a festival of karate movies.
Yes, sure. Exactly. Yeah.
And you're going to speak at it? Is that the idea?
Well, one of the panelists will comment on stuff. But now, it's long, too. It's something like, it's over 2 hours,
right? It goes on forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And what are you going to do at Comic-Con?
That. I'm doing a
pick up chicks.
And then
try to get some nerd tail.
Yeah.
And then we'll also...
dress up as a furry.
If we for My Little Pony, you're going to be a brony.
Is that a real thing?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna be come to my brony panel.
Graham's brony booth.
I tell you what, if I see anybody with a Graham's brony booth shirt at the festival at Comic-Con,
I'll give them $1,000.
Oh no, let's not get crazy. I'll buy you lunch.
Yeah, okay.
Come find me with a Graham's brony booth and I'll buy you lunch.
Fair enough. And also, we just got emailed from Rotten Tomatoes. It might be on their podcast as
well. Oh, they're just going to be running their podcast the whole time.
Yeah, and they'll have a video feed too.
That'll be super cool.
Are you going to be guests on there? Or are you going to have your podcast? Oh, I see.
We'll be guests on there too.
Look at you guys.
So come on down to Comic-Con, you guys. And of course, I'm going to be doing some shows in Minneapolis, August 14th and 15th. And then just announced, I am coming to do stand-up comedy in Hong Kong, China. Not the Hong Kong, Tokyo, the actual one. and that is... that is the 25th through the 30th of August, and I'm probably going to be adding shows in Kuala Lumpur September 4, 5, and 6. So some of you folks have emailed, hey, come, guess what? I'm coming to Hong Kong, Malaysia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So make it happen. If you live there, you know, start emailing me. And
yeah, well, you're doing a bird flu tour, right?
Yes, I'm spreading avian flu. So I'm going to bring a bag of bird flu out there with my brony booth.
You're going to sign it?
I'm going to sign it. I'm going to be autographing bird flu samples after the shows. And I'll be setting up a brony booth in Hong Kong. So check those out, you guys. And of course... like the Earbuds page on Facebook.
Yes, and you know, we've got the festival coming up too.
September 26th through the 28th. Tickets and discounted hotel rooms are at lapodfest.com. The lineup, we've already got about 20 shows confirmed. We'll have about 35 total.
And we also have a couple new things in the store. One thing we want to mention too is you can still pre-order the movie, and that will actually help us with the budget as we're shooting it.
Sure.
That is still a Comedy Film Nerds. And we also have, we're the only ones carrying Dana Gould's new shirt.
Yes.
The Bevel Aqua Heating and Cooling shirt. And that is in the store right now.
All right, guys, thank you so much for helping us out. Likes and positive reviews are free ways to help. And, of course, vote with your dollars. Thank you once again to our guest, Jason Nash. Jason Nash is Married is the Film. Check it out. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.